We're speaking now with Chuck Lohman, and he is a candidate for House District Seat 1B, Republican. And Chuck, I want to say thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Yeah, Chris, thanks. I appreciate the time and the opportunity to reach out to our voters.
Well, let's start with an introduction for voters. Tell us a bit about your background, how long you've lived here, how you wound up in North Idaho, and some of the experience and qualifications you have.
Sure, absolutely. You know, it's kind of funny, as I've been on the trail now for almost 6 months, one couple, I had mentioned my experience, and they're like, "You're pretty young." And I'm like, "Well, it's kind of like what Chris Ledoux said. He said, it ain't the years, son, it's the miles, if that makes sense." I've traveled a lot. I've worked in eight different states across the U.S., both professionally and also in the military. And as well, I've worked in nine countries overseas. And so I've done everything. I've been a carpenter. I still am a carpenter. I've been a biologist. I've been a helicopter logger, a manager in the ski industry, a missionary, a pastor, a small business owner. I was an army chaplain for 12 years and deployed for 39 months in support of, you know, our operations overseas. And so I've been a lot of places and I've served in a lot of ways that I think gives me unique experience and insight into the problems that we face here in North Idaho and as a state.
And how long have you lived in North Idaho specifically?
Oh yeah, sure. So we moved up here in 2019. I do have my degree in wildlife management from the University of Idaho, and as well, my wife was born and raised in Boise. And so we have connections to Idaho that go back many years and in many ways have considered Idaho home, although we've been kind of drug all over the place. So yeah, we landed in Sandpoint in 2019, purchased a bit of land, and we've carved out our own homestead. And as many folks in North Idaho do, that's kind of what we've got to do to make it work up here.
Yeah, a lot of people juggle a lot of jobs to make it work here.
Yep.
Any nonprofit or trade associations or any of those sorts of things you might like to mention?
Yeah, not necessarily. I'm not a part of a union. I was a Boy Scout, Eagle Scout, and my kids are still in Boy Scouts, so we have that connection there. We enjoy doing 4-H and giving back to our community that way, and as well, you know, kids sports and coaching for sports, and so we do that. My wife works for Panhandle Alliance for Education, and she's their programs director, and she really enjoys working for that nonprofit.
Well, great. So I guess here's the question that every candidate gets faced with. Why are you running, Chuck Lohman?
Yeah, no, that's great. So I've always had a heart for service and serving my community in whatever way, shape, or form that is. And Sandpoint in 2019 versus Sandpoint in 2024 are two different worlds, politically. And I've just really been impassioned to be the kind of leader that is a truly a servant leader, that I'm looking out for the needs of our community. I'm taking the time to listen to people. I need to be patient to let folks talk about their perspectives and what the issue is. In my time in the Army, I did almost 3,500 hours of personal counseling with soldiers and leaders alike. And I found that if I brought my like cookie cutter solution, they were often frustrated and weren't bought into the process. And I would be frustrated thinking to myself, you know, if they just did it my way, they'd be happy. And I've learned over the years that I need to take the time to stop and listen to the problem and then find creative solutions together. And so I really see that as lost in some of our current slate of folks running for office. They want to bring their cookie cutter solutions to problems instead of actually taking the time to understand what the problem is and then working with people to find good solutions. So that's that's my motivation. My motivation is to serve. I could probably make a whole lot more money elsewhere doing other things, but I really see that we need to be bringing our community together and not continuing to separate it and be divisive. We need to treat each other like neighbors, not like enemies. And so that's why I'm choosing to run.
Yeah, really feels like that's a prime directive for everyone now, doesn't it? If
Yeah.
we could achieve that. Well, what do you consider to be the biggest races in the House race that you're in that you'd like voters to consider?
The biggest issues I see of one is school funding, and we've talked about House Bill 521 that's been kicked around, and is I think that's an important start to help our rural schools get after the maintenance and modernization needs that they have. Though my concern in that regard is that there are schools and school districts with very significant needs in that area. And if I were to think of this as an army triage situation, we need to stop the bleeding first and address those schools with the highest need before we start doling out to the money to everyone else who is able to make it through right now, if that makes sense. So in one, if, for example, you look at the Salmon School District. They have their middle school, and it was built either on or near an earthquake fault, and they had to abandon that school. They can't use it. It's not safe. In Boundary County, we have a school district or an elementary school, Valley View Elementary School. It was built in the 40s. It was built with limestone blocks, and it is literally disintegrating and falling apart and is one catastrophic event away from being unusable. So there's schools and school districts that need to be addressed first, and I would have rather seen it go to those with the highest need and address those issues first before we address other issues, if that makes sense.
Well, it does. I think the formula now is based on population, right? The way that money will be dispersed.
Sure. And
So
I guess my argument in that regard is our rural areas will continue to struggle to find the funding they need to modernize and create the uniform education experience that is mandated by the state constitution. And so if the money goes to the highest population areas, well, they already have the highest tax base in are able to raise funds easier than our rural counties are able to do that. So it's one of those things that as the legislature, we've got to work hard to ensure that there is a uniform education experience across the state.
yeah, this is a multi-year plan. Would you anticipate trying to advocate for a change in that funding formula for future
I
years
definitely
where the money is
would.
dispersed? Yeah.
I think we need to look at, again, what are the highest needs for facilities and updating, and then go after those highest needs first.
Okay, so that's the education finance bill. Are there other issues that you think are should be most top of mind for voters?
Well, so keeping our arable lands arable. So, as we look across the state and as we develop our agricultural lands into residential communities, once we pave over those communities, it's really difficult, if not impossible, to get that land back. And finding ways to incentivize folks to keep their lands in production, I think, is vitally important. I think there's some really unique things that we can do to keep land in production and still allow the family landowners. Oftentimes, we had a family farm that went the way of many family farms where no one was interested in continuing the practice, and so it was auctioned off and sold off. And for a family farm, for a family to sell their property, that represents a lot of money, and oftentimes money that they could not make in lifetimes of work, right? So, but finding creative ways that we can still develop a portion of those lands for residential use, but keep those lands in production. So one thing that I think through is many of our communities in Bonner and Boundary County are 5-acre lots, and you're allowed to you develop your 1 acre for your house homestead, but then you've got 4 acres of ground, like either it's potential for hay fields or some other form of agriculture or forested. And if a community could come together and conglomerate those lands and create an active land management plan, and then they could qualify potentially for some sort of tax exemption, like a forestry exemption or an agriculture exemption, by conglomerating their lands together and creating a management plan. And I think specifically, our northern forests are on a 100-year burn cycle. That's what we know from our natural history of the area. And it's been 100 years since we've had a catastrophic stand replacing burn. So this would encourage folks to enter into good land management practices, manage their forests well, reduce their fuel loads, and make it easier for them to actively manage their forests by coming together. And if there's ways that we can incentivize that, that's something that I look for as we can do as a community, and make it easier for folks to do by providing incentives to do that.
Chuck,
Another
do you
is
know of states that have something like this going on already? Is there a model
no,
for it out there?
no, not necessarily. That's something that as I've interacted with folks in the community, family ranchers that are in that position where they don't have their kids aren't interested in ranching or things like that. And it's a concern of mine, because once we lose the ability to grow food and fiber, we're going to be looking to other interests to provide that, and we really should be providing that for ourselves.
Okay, other issues that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, definitely. As we look at, so one of my funding principles is there's things that constitutionally our state is supposed to be working towards or providing, and one of those is the safety and security of our state. And as I look across the state, I worked for the Fish and Game for some time. One of the things that is very interesting to me is that the Conservation Corps and the Fish and Game has not grown in at least 30 years, if not longer, the number of conservation officers that we have in the field. And yet our state population has grown by nearly 700,000 people in that same time frame. So we have more people in the woods committing wildlife crime, and oftentimes that crime is tied in with drug crime and other types of crime, but we still have the same number of conservation officers in our state. And so what would likely differentiate me from my opponents is the fact that if we're going to ask our government to do something, we need to ensure that they have the resources they need to do that job well. And so in terms of law enforcement, fire and fire protection, we have not seen the number of officers in the field increasing consonant to the population. And that's concerning to me, because when we try and continually reduce budgets and do things like that, we're actually assuming a lot of risk, and our agencies aren't actually able to provide the service that we're asking them to do.
Okay, Well, same question again. Is there another issue you'd like to identify?
Lastly, veterans. Being a veteran myself and coming out of the service, determining that it was time for me to hang up my boots and go and do something else. I heard the promises that of veterans' preference, veterans' benefits, and I often found those promises to be empty or so administratively encumbered that they were hard to access. And so that's one thing that I definitely feel impassioned to make sure that I do my best to make sure our veterans, my brothers and sisters in arms, have a home to come to here in Idaho, and we make it a place where they can find meaningful and purposeful work in our communities.
Have you had any experience with the local veterans support? Have you had to dip into that here in Bonner County?
I've known Brian Holt for some time, and he's definitely been a good resource to folks in that regard, and definitely making those programs more available and accessible to our veterans.
Okay. Well, we have a little bit of time. I thought it would be useful to touch on some of the legislation that came up this last session and get your thoughts on the legislation and how you might have voted yourself or whether you would have favored or opposed it. Some of these
Sure.
bills were proposed, some of them got approved and signed by the governor, some of them were allowed to basically die in committee or get voted down in the legislature themselves. But let's
Sure.
just run through a few of them. Now, I gotta say, there's over 100 bills that came up this session.
Yeah, so
So I wouldn't
some of it
expect you
might
to know
be
every one of them.
absolutely.
And so it's fair game to say, yeah, I'm not familiar with that one, but let's rattle off a few and see. One of them was a bill on private militias, Senate Bill
Oh.
1240 would have eliminated Idaho's prohibition on private militias. And that excited some comment around the state. It didn't, in the end, make it out of committee. Sometimes these bills get proposed two or three times before they actually get two or three during two or three different sessions before they actually either get put on the shelf permanently or get approved. Do you know anything about that one and where you might have stood on getting rid of the prohibition on private militias in Idaho?
Yeah, so I had not engaged that bill, so not being involved in that discussion, it's hard to comment. I'd have to dig up the history on why that was instituted in the first place, and then what purpose it would serve
Okay.
to repeal that. So yeah,
Okay. Well, here's a
sorry.
little bit different take on the issue having to do with guns, and that was House Bill 415, which would allow public school employees with concealed weapons permits to bring their concealed firearms onto school grounds. The House passed the bill, but it didn't make it out of the the Senate State Affairs Committee.
Yeah.
And then there was a second bill that would have allowed local entities to impose stricter firearm training requirements if they chose to. That was again referred to the State Senate Affairs Committee, didn't make it out of there. So this has to do with employees having
Employees of the school district having the ability to carry concealed
to
weapons
carry concealed
while
weapons, right?
they're, yeah. And so I have worked with some of our school district trustees discussing this issue, and I'm not going to quote any of them of saying anything, but as I think through that issue, what I would want to see in something like that is that those individuals are part of the overall standing safety plan with the school district, and if the school district feels that that is a genuine need for their school district. Our three different school districts in Bonner and Boundary County have different resources available to them. And so yeah, I would like to see that as part really pushed down to the school board level, allow them to understand what their threat is and what having a teacher in the seat, having access to a firearm that is handled safely. I would like to see them part of the entire school plan, safety plan. I would like to see them tied in with law enforcement, because law enforcement will be in that entire response plan, and that would be rehearsed so that it's done safely. I want to know that that person is trained and proficient in the use of their firearm. And you know, last year I shot a bear in our neighborhood that had killed a number of chickens, and I had to do it with my Model 1911 45, and I was not as proficient with that firearm as I thought I was. Mm-hmm. And so and that's, you know, just handling a nuisance bear in our neighborhood. I would hate for that to be the case for someone who is protecting the lives of children. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, well, law officers themselves, they do hundreds of hours of training.
Law enforcement personnel, they go through firearms training consistently, and even folks that are on search and rescue, they have to go through firearms training to carry firearms in the field. And so I think that's a reasonable requirement to do that in the schools. But mostly I think that needs to be at the school district level for them to make sure that it's that they're meeting the needs of their community in that regard.
Okay, well, one more question on a bill along these lines was Senate Bill 1374, and that was actually submitted by our District 1 Senator Scott Herndon. It blocks lessees of public property from banning concealed weapons unless they are renting the property for, quote, a private event by invitation only, or for a commercial event that charges admission, quote. That did pass. It was signed by Governor Little. This stems really from a controversial action that occurred here when Mr. Herndon, before he was a senator, he brought suit against the city to compel the Festival of Sandpoint to allow people carrying guns into their concerts. Because it's held on public property. And ultimately, he lost that lawsuit. Now, this one actually, the bill he passed actually specifies a commercial event that charges admission would be able to ban weapons. So not sure exactly how this is going to impact the Festival of Sandpoint. I haven't seen any further clarification on that point either. What would be your take on that bill? When would you have?
Yeah, I mean, that's a private organization determining how folks will participate in their private event. If someone feels so strongly that they want to take a weapon into a place where a private event where people don't want that there, they don't have to participate. So I think a private event should have the ability to dictate what they think is safe and prudent for their event. And oftentimes these music artists and bands don't want that, because there's alcohol involved, and it can be a very dangerous environment for them to even perform. So a lot of those musicians won't even perform in an event like that. So I do think there are some valid measures in that discussion, that there should be metal detectors and screenings if that's going to be the case, and I think that's prudent as well. So, but a private organization who's renting a facility should have the ability dictate the rules of engagement in their private event.
Okay, we have probably time for just another question or two here. There was a bill, House Bill 710, the Harmful Library Materials Bill, and it allows for lawsuits for civil damages after a parent provides 60 days written notice to a library, asks them to move what they deem to be a harmful book to an adult-only section. That was approved by both houses of the legislature, and Governor Little signed it into law.
Okay, yep.
Where would you have stood on that one?
Yeah, so my concern on that one is with the lawsuits is that eventually the persons that are going to be dictating what materials are in our libraries are insurance companies. And as a Christian, as a Bible-believing Christian, people find the Bible offensive. And so at what point is the Bible not going to be allowed into a library because it's got offensive material to folks? So I do think there's a simpler solution, and that's we do it with movies, we do it with television shows, is just having a rating system, and those books are stacked appropriately, and children have access to age-appropriate areas in the library. And if a book doesn't want to be rated, it goes in an unrated section, and no child under 17 goes in that section. So I think there's a simpler solution. There does need to be accountability with that, but my concern is that we open it up to insurance companies dictating what would be in our public libraries. And so that's kind of scary to me.
Okay. And I think we are about out of time, Chuck Lohman.
Sure.
Candidate for House Seat B here in District 1. Just one last little question, and then I'd like to know how people can get in touch with you. So why should people vote for you? What differentiates you as a candidate?
Yeah, so again, it's not the years, it's the miles. I've been a lot of places, and I've been all around the world. I've seen good governments doing good things, and I've seen bad governments doing bad things. And so what differentiates me is that I'm the kind of leader who truly believes in servant leadership. I want to understand the problem before I bring a solution to the table. And I understand the problem by being connected to genuine people. And so I want to be connected to our community. I want to serve our community. And so that's why I'm serving. You can get a hold of me at chucklohman.com. You can email me at chuck@chucklohman.com. Or here's my phone number, and it goes right to my phone, 208-946-5928. I'd love to have a genuine conversation with you and see how we can move forward together.
Okay, Chuck Lohman, Republican for House District 1B. Thank you again for speaking with us.
No problem. Thanks for the time, Chris.